Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. Today, I have my lovely wife, Jennifer, with me today, and we are going to be talking about reasons why married couples give up too soon in their marriage. So this is like a situation of like, why do people ultimately decide that things are unworkable and they just, it's ready to throw in the towel and to maybe move towards divorce? So the hope here is to be able to talk to all of you about maybe if you're not wanting to move towards divorce, maybe some of the things that you can provide the relationship to avoid some of these pitfalls. But before we get into that, I do want to get into our client win of the week. This is a big win from our client, Nicole. Actually, we were looking over this just before this, and it's like, oh, it's Nicole, because, you know, it's great. Nicole has been a great person to work with. So she was very kind to share this. She says, with a lot of work from Mark, Heather's masterclasses and myself, we are slowly working things out. While we step carefully along our new path together, I wanted to let people know that it can be done. It's hard work and takes a lot of time and effort. Mm-hmm. But if you know it's what you want, then you'll be sure to put that time in and you will only see the benefit. I mean, she says a lot more in this post. She talks about spending more time together with her husband and taking things slowly and getting to know her husband again and getting away for a few long weekends. But like, effectively, what we're saying is, yes, I want to recognize that Nicole was very patient with this situation. And there were times when it looked like it might not have worked out. And I'm really happy to say, like, yeah, it's good to see progress like this. And it's good to see results. You know, sometimes when we share our wins, it's not always, and it all worked out.
Yeah, sometimes it's showing the progress made along the way. And I appreciate seeing that as well, because, you know.
And in this case, it is. And it all worked out through the scenario. So it's always nice to have these moments as well. I believe that we had a poll a little while ago. This was, honestly, we're a little bit behind. This was a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about, why do you think couples give up in the relationship too soon? We asked all of you. And we had a lot of different answers. We heard things like a lack of respect, outside influence was some comments. There was a sense of there not being any compromise. And I do think a lot of these things,
right,
are going to have an impact.
Yeah. And we'll talk about some of these things. I see fear, resentment, lack of trust coming up, which is definitely something with progress.
Yeah. And I always like kind of looping into these polls and kind of comparing your answers and explaining some of these answers in the context of like a more unified theory. And that's kind of my rough approach on how I approach some of this. But I wanted to get into what we think some of the reasons are why people give up a little bit too soon. So do you want to start us off, Jen?
Sure. Well, sometimes people don't really know what they want to expect it to be. So there's some unrealistic expectations, maybe some vague ones. It's not being like clear and realistic about the goals, perhaps.
I think a lot of it, when you hear a lot like, okay, if to fix your marriage, you need to work on, there's almost like a very, very common thing that everyone says that they need to work on. It's communication, right?
Yeah.
And so we're saying, I personally think that this has a lot to do with where some of these unrealistic expectations come from. I think it is a lot of poor communication around expectations.
And not just like to your spouse, but maybe even to yourself. like it probably, it might be muddled what it would look like when it's, you know, it's at a situation where you feel it's healthy. You're not even, you might not even know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I know some people that haven't experienced it and they've asked, you know, I've heard them ask like, well, what would it even look like to have, you know, a safe, reasonable expectation here or there with certain things, and they can't even verbalize that. So getting clear about that seems important.
Yeah, I do think like, yeah, being very clear about what you're expecting does help an awful lot. I do hear over and over again, like people who say that I've been telling my husband or I've been telling my wife, this is what I want over and over and over again. And I do recognize that does happen. Like, even you and I, we sometimes feel that we're being very clear with what we're expecting. But I would say there is a fair number where this is not the case.
Right, right. And even people that try to communicate well and have reasonable expectations, sometimes, like Mark said, don't communicate that well between one another. We're like, well, they should know because I'm acting this way.
Yeah. I mean, there's another side to this, though. I do think that it's not just when we're talking about unrealistic expectations. Yeah. It's not just about communication. I think sometimes, I think it's about there's a lack of support for some high standards or expectations. I can think of, you know, as an example, the stereotypical husband who comes home and, you know, is expecting dinner and then wants a sexy evening with his wife. And meanwhile, the wife doesn't feel supported
and tired and frazzled from today, the day's events.
So it might be a reasonable expectation to have intimate moments, physically intimate moments as a couple. But if there isn't some support behind some of those expectations, it can really lead to poor results as well.
Yeah.
So like, I absolutely think that sometimes like even having a very high expectation is fine. Mm-hmm.
And maybe some examples of that would be like spotless house or a husband that comes home at a certain time, maybe like, you know, has reasonable work hours, but you know, is maybe in a situation where that's not possible.
And I think an expectation like that is fine if there's a high amount of support for those expectations.
Yeah. Cause like, one of our favorite sayings is, you know, you got to commit to what you want and you got to show that. So if you say, oh, I would like to, you know, have a spotless house. Okay. Well, what are you committed to? Not just your spouse, but how are you committed to having a spotless house? Tell me about that. Yeah. Or how are you committed to having better communication? What does that look like for you?
Do you really, really need your spouse to be a high earner? Okay. Then are you committed to supporting that spouse and having the intense schedule that's probably needed to be a high income earner? Are you supporting the situation, understanding that they're going to be home late, that they're going to be tired, that they're probably not going to be helping out around the house as much? In all likelihood.
I would say and are you thinking about it from both ends, yours and your spouse, and what that looks like so that you can give support for both of you?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Like, what are you doing that to support that situation is a really good question in a lot of these scenarios. So another example, do you want more connection and love? If that is an expectation within your relationship, then are you providing the environment for connection and love to happen? And we might say, you know, and I hear this a lot, my wife should, or my husband should, you know, be doing all this. And honestly, I think it's a lot better, a lot healthier to be looking at this as if this is your request, then how are you approaching it to allow for that to happen?
Yeah.
Like maybe your wife should be more seductive or whatever happens to be, but then are you actually supporting them, communicating some of those expectations and supporting them to allow for that to happen? So I want to ask you then, okay, so how do some of these problematic expectations, how does this actually lead to the downfall? Like if we had to like follow the path there, what do you think? Why does unrealistic expectations does that tend to lead to?
Well, if we're going to just break apart the word here, you've already said unrealistic. So maybe reading someone's mind is an unrealistic expectation, first of all. And you're like, they should just know. And a lot of people have that unrealistic expectation when we've been married for 17 years and sometimes can fall into that a little bit. And I have to remind myself, oh, well, actually, no, I have to verbalize about this, and that's okay.
So we take a situation like that where someone is saying, they should know what I want.
Yeah.
So what happens there is that leads to some unspoken expectations, some disappointment.
Resentment.
And then you keep taking that down far enough, and it turns into a lot of resentment that you hold on to. It turns into a situation where that person who's holding on to the resentment isn't contributing emotionally as much into the relationship. And you get this just unhappy situation. Mm-hmm. This is essentially that thread, like where all this leads.
And you might even begin to say things like, well, I don't even want to tell you when we can do it anyways. Or stuff like that. It starts coming out as snarky, maybe even, because it's going to come out sideways.
Exactly.
When you're unhappy like that.
Number two, our second reason here why couples give up too soon.
I feel like this is the biggest one. No actual plan. Like you ask them, well, you want these things. Well, how are you going to get there? Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about the, you know, expectations, but like sometimes you need more than healthy expectations. You need support. You need time. Like we just learned from Nicole. And patience with each other as you go learn through these things.
I do think these two items kind of go hand in hand. I do think unclear expectations does lead to unclear plans, which leads to feeling insecure about whatever's wanted.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like very much, you know, we run into clients who have, where there's like things like alcohol or drugs that are ruining the marriage. And, you know, what I hear time and time again is, like there's some desire by the non-using spouse to have some patience, but they've kind of run out of patience. And largely it's this sense of, I don't know how to support. I don't know what kind of scenario would lead to this being resolved. Yeah. Like there is this lack of actionable plan that really creates a high amount of insecurity.
Right. And you give up at some point if you don't have an actual plan.
Yeah. I do think, like I think you were saying earlier, like let's pretend you've had clear communication about needs and expectations.
Because your clear communication, if we use your example, could be like you need to stop using drugs.
Sure. And that you've provided enough support for all of that. Let's say that you're encouraging them to go to like AA meetings, or you're offering to get babysitters so you can go to counseling. Then why isn't anything happening? And, you know, often this comes down to there not being a very clear plan to solve problems or meet needs. Maybe it's because there hasn't been proper professional support. Maybe it's because there's a problem with follow through, which I still think could be solved with proper professional support. I'm thinking of another example. Recently I spoke with a couple where connection has been missing for many years. Mm-hmm. A lot of resentment in the scenario. And when speaking with one of the spouse, they claimed they thought everything was fine, and so believed that nothing needed to be changed. There didn't appear to be a clear plan on how to fix the problem, but it was a lot due to being unclear with the expectations. Mm-hmm. And when the expectations were a little bit more cleared up and there's a pathway for requests to happen, to be acknowledged and supported, everyone started feeling, it didn't solve everything, but everything started feeling a lot better.
I think that can reduce some anxiety and stress to be like, okay, you know, I know it might take time, but at least we're starting down this path and I know what the first few steps feel like. And I think that's really helpful for holding that long-term view.
Yeah. I think if this is your case, I think a really awesome place to start is to start with taking responsibility and action for the pieces that you are responsible for. This is very much about trust, and it's very much about security. And a lot of that can be built up with some clear expectations and some follow through, some demonstration. You have like one after the other and you keep building that up. And it's a lot easier to work around this concern. And I'm, you know, I was just kind of even explaining this or even giving my own thoughts on this, but like, what do you think? How does holding yourself accountable for your own part, your own problems, and creating some plan of action, how does that have an impact on any relationship?
Well, I think it gives you an idea of what can you control and what you can't, and coming to peace with that a little bit, especially when it comes to your own emotions, because you can't own someone else's response to you, but you can, you know, own how you respond to them, and you can own your feelings about it, but you can be like, you know, this is hard, they're sad, but you know, there's a difference between how you're feeling and how I'm feeling, and that's okay.
So you're referring to like taking personal responsibility of feelings. And let's say that that's going well. Why is that important, do you think?
Because then I'm able to be a little more objective. And that's always important when you're trying to solve a problem.
Okay. My opinion there, like when there's a lot of accountability, I do feel like it creates a little bit more a sense of trust and openness. The opposite scenario I feel is a lot of blame, where it's saying, well, I'm feeling bad and you're the reason I'm feeling bad. And my observation in those scenarios is it tends to shut down a lot of communication.
Yeah.
And it tends to shut down solutions because everyone's like, I don't need to do anything because they're the one that needs to change.
Yeah. And then you get kind of stuck.
Yeah, this is like exactly what I think happens when people won't come to some agreement of like who's responsible for specific problems or what part of the problems they're responsible for.
Yeah.
Or if there's a lot of resistance to say, no, I'm doing nothing wrong. I think it really, really creates a lot of, it shuts down communication, shuts down solutions in general.
Yeah.
So I want to discuss like, you know, let's apply this very specifically to a few different things, like how an unwilling partner can create some problems here and how people can kind of get around some of this. So let's talk about this in terms of like substance abuse, because I feel like
when you have an unwilling partner.
Yeah, someone who's saying that nothing is my fault. Because I actually was just talking to someone the other day where there's a huge alcohol problem in the relationship. Uh-huh. And the alcoholic says, I'm only drinking because of you.
Okay.
And it's like, wow, that sounds like a rough scenario. And like,
yeah. How do you even get out of that here?
So I'm wondering, like in a scenario like this, mm-hmm. how does one take responsibility for your own part in order to move that closer to some resolution?
So if we're using this substance abuse, alcohol specifically, you could be like, I feel some really hurt emotions when you are saying some things to me that are hard to hear. I might not agree with all of them and I don't know what to do. And sometimes I just, so you acknowledge that you use the substance, but it's not their fault.
I'm actually going the other direction. Like my question is more of like, what does the non-using partner do?
Okay.
And like, here is this situation where a partner is pushing a lot of blame. They're not taking accountability.
Okay.
And we're talking about saying, hey, part of the problem here is that there's not an actionable plan. There's not like a view on how things can move forward. And we're in a scenario where someone is not taking responsibility for their own actions.
Okay.
Like, how do we create
that is really tricky.
Yeah.
I actually don't know. What would we do, Mark?
Well, you know, like we were talking about, like, part of this is having a lot of accountability over the things that you have control over. Mm-hmm. You're right. I think that's a very difficult scenario.
It is a difficult
situation. I do think, you know, I'm trying to think back to like when I have helped people in these scenarios. And I think a lot of it had to do with creating some healthy boundaries. Okay. I'm thinking of a few different ones. Like I'm thinking of one client I helped where there was a lot of infidelity and the husband kept coming back over and over and over again and then treating her poorly and then leaving and cheating with someone else.
Okay.
The solution there ended up being she took accountability for her just kind of giving in and facilitating what he was doing and making it easy for him to leave without any consequences. Okay. And so, you know, she approached this. She said, okay, this is problematic for me and this is not feeling healthy and I need to have some boundaries. And this is one way that things can be better, but I'm going to have this very clear boundary. I'm going to not let you back into the house until you're ready to get some help.
And it's not like it comes off as a punishment. It comes off as like a, this is a healthy thing. Mm-hmm. So it should come off like that. Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah. I mean, we could have a whole discussion about boundaries and we have in the past. I think we're getting off on a bit of a tangent, but I'd like to look at like one other possible scenario in this case of an actionable plan with a partner that is unwilling to, they're having a hard time taking responsibility for themselves. But let's look at this lost spark of romance. Okay. We're saying, there's a lack of romance here and it's because it's nothing to do with me. You're just the one that's being unwilling here. And we're having to deal with that.
Okay. And it's a little unfair to heap it on one partner.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our audience actually sits in these situations where there's a lot of blame.
Right.
And there's a lot of, you know, a lack of hope because there isn't a really clear plan on how to solve this.
There might not be agreement that, it's 100% my fault.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know?
But even though that might be the blame that's...
I do think even in these cases, it's about having very clear boundaries or very clear accountability for what you are responsible for in this situation and saying, this is what I'm responsible for and this is what I'm going to take care of. And I also need I'm going to draw this line and I'm not going to take responsibility for these other things. And I think it's very similar to the substance abuse case in that regard. It's I'm going to take responsibility for these pieces and this is what I'm going to do about it. If it was a lack of romance, it'd say I'm going to, you know, make myself available for there to be some romance. I'm going to make requests so that I can feel supported. So that I can have the energy for romance, but I do need you to do X, Y, and Z. And I think a lot of times it's that very clear division.
And as we talk about this, I'm betting most people would agree that seems really fair. You know, whether you're the partner that feels like it's 100% that one person's fault. If we're looking at this very objectively, we can say reasonably that we should kind of say this is where it ends for my responsibility and here's where you sit. Without a feeling blamey.
If you all feel like we're being unclear on like what's expected here, please let us know in the comments. But essentially like the pitfall here is not having an actionable plan. And I think you would agree the solution seems to be having very clear accountability for your own actions and taking action on that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Good summary. Sure. All right. Number three on our list of pitfalls, why people give up too soon, is having a negative view of failure. What do you think about that?
This is an interesting one. It's almost like I don't even want to try because I don't believe it could work, or I've failed before. So why go through the pain of this when I know it, like I feel like it won't work out?
I hear a lot of people, their spouse says, I don't want to just go in circles and go back to where we started. Almost like if I come back, if I consider the relationship, I'm just going to get stuck again.
It seems like in that case, there's disbelief.
Yeah.
You know?
And I find that interesting. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can contribute to that, the sense of like, I don't know if I can trust that there's actually going to be changes. And I'm once again, I like to make comparisons to drug use. And I'm reminded of like the times when I was working at a rehab clinic. And one of the things I noticed is that I would have repeat people come through the rehab center. And what was interesting is I do feel like each time that came through, there was a little bit more knowledge or a little bit more, something a little bit more taken away. Okay. And what do you think about that? Like, is it helpful to redefine the failure and like to look at what kind of progress is needed?
So I think it's not a pass fail sometimes, and that's where we can get stuck. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, just talking about progress, depending on what the problem is, how long it's been there. And the other thing I was thinking of is when people say, I've tried and it hasn't worked, is once again, they didn't have the actionable plan, or they didn't have those unrealistic expectations. And so they were like, well, how did you tell me about that? Tell me about how you tried and it didn't work. And it may be like, for a week, this is what I did.
I do feel like it's very much related to.
Okay, let's pick up and try again, because a week is just a very short time to try a good communication skills.
You're right.
When you haven't for the whole entire marriage. So let's take this in bite-sized chunks. And that's what we're meaning by, you know, revisiting what it means to pass or fail, like, and all the weight we put on that.
I absolutely agree. I think it's very much related to the other two items that we're talking about. And if you can solve those other items, then this is much less
of a big deal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes though, I do think that it has a little bit of a different nuance. It's not just like, I'm going to get stuck. Mm-hmm. It's more like I'm worried about how people will perceive me if we struggle or if we fail. I've heard that if I come back, how will your family view me? Cause I've been a monster. Or if I come back and this doesn't work, is this going to impact the children? Or like, are they going to see us go through these terrible cycles over and over
again? Right, they might see some fighting, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're giving up or things are worse than they were before. Sometimes you have to work through things and it can look rocky.
But like that specific one, I don't know if I've talked to you about this, of how many times I've heard this kind of excuse of, if I come back, how will people view me? Your family is never going to accept me again is kind of a statement that I've heard many times.
And that can be frightening. It can be frightening to face some of those fears.
I do think that like it's a legitimate fear that needs to be acknowledged.
Will I be accepted is a basic fear of everybody.
Some of the solutions that I've had to get around that thing is being very conscious of the kind of messages that you do want to build up, and having support, having some sort of actionable plan once again to build up some of these messages. So it's a fear of how will your family view me?
Yeah.
Well, how do we want to describe what happened? Is a good discussion to start having? Like
that's a great one to get past that. I like that a lot.
Or if it's like, I don't want our kids to see that we're struggling. It's mm-hmm. the same idea. What kind of message do we want to impart to our kids? What kind of lesson do we want them to take away from this?
Because you can frame you can frame trying as not giving up, as having some grit. Like even though things are, like you can explain to your kid that, you know, struggle is part of, you know, having success. So
I mean, you could easily have a positive message to say, we stuck in this, not because we're stuck, but because we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can, because marriage is important, because it's important for us to both be here for all of you. You might say to the kids or whatever it happens to be.
So what we're saying with this third one, negative view of failure, is that maybe you need to figure out how you're telling your story to yourself and your spouse together.
Or that there's some agreement on what kind of messages are good to build up and how do you want to view some of the struggles?
Yeah.
And how are you then supporting that view? If you're saying we are going to try no matter
what. Right. And then
what are you doing?
And then how do you support your spouse in that narrative?
Yeah. Exactly.
That we're trying and this is what trying looks like and it's all right. And we're here for each other.
Okay. The fourth item, fourth pitfall, is this unclear on an internal why. And what I mean by that, it's like, why am I unhappy? Why are things going bad?
Yeah.
I think we run into a lot of people who are just like, I just get this general sense of feeling bad. And so.
Right. And there's no clear reasons necessarily, or like, cause then you don't know what your actual plan is if you don't have that.
Case in point, very clear example. Had someone come to me the other week. They said, my husband has a history of leaving relationships when they feel like when they start feeling like work. Mm. And my thought was
super nebulous.
That's why is that such a big deal? What is actually being asked for in the scenario? What are the expectations around relationships? What's wanted? And, you know, exploring some of that, I think would be super helpful in that relationship.
I think so. That sounds like there's a lot of discovery to be had with that question.
I think understanding your why can help lead absolutely to clear expectations, clear requests, a clear plan. So what, you know, if we take this a step further, like instead of just avoiding disaster.
Yeah.
Why is it helpful in a healthy relationship to have very clear kind of internal personal insight about what you want?
Well, it creates better communication. Sure. If we're revisiting some of these things, I think it takes care of a lot of it. Mm-hmm. You have clear expectations about who's responsible for what and where the boundaries are.
Mm-hmm. Makes it easier to make requests and create an actionable plan.
Yeah, and support whatever is trying to happen here.
Yeah.
With your words and your actions.
I think, let's pat us on the back, but I think we do a good job with having personal examination, or we do a good job of personal, like internal examination and being able to talk to each other about how we view each other.
Yeah, and every once in a while, things do get muddled and there does tend to be like a big revisit.
Yeah.
But usually, you know, because we're redefining failure and success once again, it's like daily. Sometimes there are some small clearing ups that need to happen for good communication. And sometimes you have to be like, no, let's stop the bus for a minute. We need to spend some time getting clear on this big, you know, the elephant in the room or whatever the elephant happens to be at that time.
So the last pitfall, the last reason why people give up a little bit too soon here, is sometimes they focus on immediate circumstances or feelings instead of a long-term perspective. Mm. Some examples of this, especially around COVID, is they'll say, this time period recently was terrible and I was unhappy and we never got out and, you know, it was so stressful, without looking at like,
contributed to that?
What contributed?
So maybe there was something really big societal-wise.
I mean, sometimes I hear like what I consider, I'm going to say, so, what I consider ridiculous scenarios where they're like, I've been unhappy for the last 6 weeks. And I'm like, oh.
What's going on for the last
6 weeks? Boo-hoo. Like, oh, really? 6 weeks? You've been unhappy for 6 weeks? Like, that's a real example where, like, someone's like, I've been unhappy for the last 6 weeks, and so I'm calling it quits, and I'm like, come on.
6 weeks is a short amount of time, especially if you've been together for a long time and have a lot to lose.
I mean, so, especially depending on the length of the relationship, I would even consider, like, too much of a focus on the short term even could be up to, like, a couple of years. I mean, I know that's a long time to suffer.
Right.
But if I had someone come in like this, you know, immediately the questions come to mind like, okay, well, what changed in this time period? What are some of the contributing factors for it starting to be less enjoyable? Can we address something in there before we just give up and say there's nothing to be done?
So it sounds like there needs to be lots of introspection if this is happening. And it's okay if it's happening, if you feel like you've had a horrible short period of time.
Yeah, I do think like kind of the general problem is like the thinking behind this is this idea of, or a tendency to paint broad negative strokes mm-hmm. when around the entire relationship, when something a little bit more locally is bad. And I will admit, if I'm in a foul mood, sometimes I'm guilty of this. I'll be like, Jen isn't listening to me. And then it starts becoming, Jen never listens to me. And why do I put up with this? Mm-hmm. And I've been putting up with this for a long time. And then I calm down. And this usually lasts like, you know, a brief period.
It's a storm. It's a storm and yeah. it passes. And hopefully you don't do anything big during the storm. That'll have major consequences.
No, but I'm
so not.
I'm pointing this out to kind of recognize the thinking behind this.
Right. But we all get them. We all get these foul moods that blow in, and hopefully you have this long-term perspective. Be like, this is just a bad few days.
Yeah, I mean, it can be.
This longer. Is a bad month. Some terrible things have happened.
And you all might be saying, well, it's been a bad 10 years. Okay, maybe this one doesn't apply to you, mm-hmm. but I do have enough experience seeing these sort of scenarios where they're like, well, it's feeling bad now, right. and so therefore it's going to continue to feel bad.
And then just looking at all those other circumstances that aren't your spouse and taking responsibility for, hey, perhaps this time period that I'm feeling terrible in it isn't just because of them.
I do think that part of the failure here is, especially when there's infidelity involved in the scenario, is kind of the grass is greener sort of view of yeah. this is locally bad now.
I can escape.
Do you, yeah. Right. And here's yeah. this easy, quote unquote, easy solution right over there.
To feel happy.
This person must be my soulmate, because it feels good to be with them and I haven't felt good for this whole time.
Yeah.
And I think the failure there is seeing that similar patterns or problems are likely to happen in these subsequent other solutions. That I observe that many times that the problems don't automatically go away when you get rid of a relationship. And there's a little bit too much emphasis on how other people are responsible for your woes, is what I think part of this pitfall, but I don't know.
Yeah, but every circumstance is different. We're just generalizing.
Yeah, so if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it.
It's all right. It's not you. Don't apply it. Don't be too offended.
So to sum everything up.
Right.
Basically, what we're saying is there's some amount of error, what I would call errors in thinking, that leads to people saying, that's it, I'm done, when there's a lot of solutions to still explore.
Right. And when people say that, they're not seeing the solutions yet, and that's all right.
And so if you can recognize what some of these pitfalls are, whether that's unrealistic expectations, or a lack of an actionable plan, mm-hmm. or a negative view of failure, an unclear internal sense of why there's unhappiness, or a focus on immediate circumstances and feelings. Mm-hmm. If you can identify the pitfall, I think it becomes a lot easier to provide a way out.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you agree, let us know. And if you disagree, let us know. I love feedback. I don't mind at all if you guys call me out and say, Mark, you have no idea what you're talking about. Jen, you have no idea. We're fine. I relish in that sort of scenario because, you know, if I can learn something new, I really enjoy that scenario. Sure. So last bit here.
Marriage
Mythbuster. Yeah. So we always, with this, we like to look at some comments, some things that we see out in the wild, some statements that people make, and we gotta shake our head and be like, actually, that's not true.
And this is a good one. The romance never dies for couples in love. Mm. Like, it should always feel like that fresh new love. Otherwise, something's terribly wrong.
So is this a myth?
Well, Yes, because we're saying so.
So I'm going to say the truth here. Well, you know, there have been a few rare occurrences where I say, hey, this one is partially true. This one, it hasn't. Yeah. In this case, what I would say, what the truth is around this is that romance is less likely to die mm-hmm. for couples that focus on maintaining romance.
Shocker.
I do think that a lot of long-term relationships where romance dies, it's because they are not giving adequate attention.
Yeah, I would say because life becomes complicated.
No, there's a lot of good reasons.
Right. Like you're inviting somebody into your life that might have not been in all the areas before. And now they see all the cracks of the, you know, the things you deal with, all your stresses. And of course, that's going to impact.
Well, I think it's absolutely easy. For, like you said, when new things get introduced, like sure. It's absolutely easy as well to become complacent as other stressors get introduced and as your attention needs to get split into many different areas, whether that's your career or kids or volunteer coaching for the soccer team or religious responsibilities or community, whatever it happens to be, it's really easy to say, you know what? My wife will still be there when I come home in the evening and she'll understand. And so do I really need to buy the flowers? Do I really need to light the candles?
Make the gestures.
Do I really need to go out on a date this week? We went on one last week. It's so much easier for me to just sit and play video games instead. But something like that. What I would say is complacency. Complacency is the enemy.
Leads to atrophy.
Complacency is the enemy of romance. I'm going to make the statement there. Comment on that. What do you think?
Yeah.
Sure. Complacency is the enemy of. I would say that romance. I'm going to make even further statements, and you can call me out, please, if you disagree. Romance tends to come from proactive action, focus, excitement. Openness and acceptance.
I like that last one you said, acceptance. Like, yeah. So
well, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not entirely, you can have a lot of acceptance in other relationships. You can even have a lot of these things.
But it makes it easy to have fun. It makes it easy to enjoy the other person. It makes it easy to have connection.
Yeah.
And that leads for opportunities for the romance to happen and spark naturally.
I'm not going to, you know, we could have a whole segment on how to build romance and so on and so forth. But I do think, you know, and I'm not going to say this is an exhaustive list or this is the definitive list, but I do think that these things are really helpful in contributing to a more romantic scenario, like proactive action, focus, and making your relationship a priority, excitement, openness, acceptance. Yeah.
And maybe I'll leave it with one last comment that I'm going to revisit because I like this idea that what are you committed to? If you want more romance, how are you going to be committed to that?
Yeah.
So go out and do it.
Yeah. I mean, what about our romance? We've had discussions like this.
I think we do well. We keep up a really good narrative.
Well, I'm gonna point out that you and I don't always get out on dates. And
we want to.
But I'm gonna also point out, and we still end up spending a lot of individual time together because we've made that a priority.
Right.
And so then it feels like we have many romantic moments because there's a lot of focus on one-on-one attention. Because that's what
We don't have unrealistic expectations. We say, hey, we've got some time to go for a walk or hit the cafe that's in town.
I think another big factor for us where we have maintained romance is I feel like we've done a good job many times of protecting our relationship from some of these other outside things that could steal our attention away, such as having some clear, I'm going to say clear, but I'm going to put it in quotes, somewhat clear boundaries that protect our time from the kids, from work sometimes.
And I think also just like we both feel it's a priority to spend time together.
Oh, yeah.
I think quality time is what keeps it alive.
Well, I mean, we could talk, you know, like it's love languages and love. Right. But anyways, the summary, the big point that we're making here is that, you know, romance never dies for couples in love. That's just not true. It's more like it's not going to die if you pay attention to it. And if you're conscious about how you're going to build it up, if you have discussion, it does require a little bit more than just it's going to happen when mm-hmm. you've been together for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, next week, we're going to be talking about how to give space in a relationship. What's a healthy amount of space? What's not a healthy amount of space? And, you know, I think a lot of this, you know, we could center around a word like codependency versus mm-hmm. autonomy. And anyways, we're going to be talking all about space and how that impacts things. So if that's of interest to you, please come back and listen to us again. Otherwise, thank you all for listening. All right.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.